This is Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
Today, we're really excited to have Ed Owens on our podcast. He's the vice president of the Grief Recovery Institute and has journeyed from heartbreak to healing. In 2010, Ed lost his three-year-old son, Eddie Ryan. And in addition to Ed's personal experience with loss, Ed's career spans many years as an instructor, trainer, and facilitator, and he has over 23 years of military and law enforcement experience. In 2009, Ed retired from the Air Force Reserves after deploying multiple times. Ed is a compassionate leader and a change maker and passionate about sharing the grief recovery method with the world. We're so grateful to have Ed as a guest today, specifically to discuss men and grief. And so at this moment, Ed, please take a moment to further introduce yourself to our listeners.
Well, thank you for the invitation and the opportunity to be here. I'm really thrilled at this opportunity. And for all of you that are listening, thanks for tuning in. This is an important topic. And I think, John, our founder, used to say it was one of the most off-limits topics in the English language. And it has been for a long time. And the fact we're even having this conversation and that you are listening out there, you know, speaks to what is the right path I think we're on. Like, people are more open to having these conversations because so much of the pain, the conflicting feelings, the grief we carry is about all these undelivered emotional communications that we just don't want to have these topics around. Like, we just don't want to sit there and be emotionally honest. We can get into all that type of stuff. So the fact we're having this, thank you. Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for those who are listening.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Ed. Let's just start with you maybe telling us about the Grief Recovery Institute, get a little bit more framing there, and then we'll jump into more of the grief-focused questions.
Sure. So the Grief Recovery Institute came about because our founder, John James, in 1978, shortly after his firstborn son came into the world, he would die. And John was no stranger to heartache. He grew up in an alcohol addicted home. His only brother was an Olympic athlete, took a nap and just never woke up. He was a Vietnam combat veteran. And he had all of those different experiences in his life. But the death of his firstborn son, John really found himself in this place, wanting to really understand, why does it hurt so bad? And importantly, what can I do about it? And that's kind of started this journey, and he kind of pieced things together for himself in the 70s. It worked for him. He went back to building some of the first solar homes in California. He had a construction company. I mean, he was not a psychologist or anything else. He was just a grieving human being who wanted to feel and heal from that pain. And then he started helping people. And then the Institute kind of was born from it. He developed the method, and then the Institute was born from it. And for about 45 years, we have been training people to be specialists in our method, which is an evidence-based practice, to help people who are grieving all over the world. Our mission is to help the greatest number of grievers in the shortest period of time. We train and certify specialists in our method and techniques, and we help grieving people on 6 continents. And we've trained probably 20,000 specialists and helped probably millions of people. We have the handbook and other books that have been written by the Institute by John Russell. The handbook alone is in over 40-something languages. We have specialists on 6 continents. I always joke, we're not in Antarctica because the scientists are stuck in their heads. And they're not going to talk about their feelings. And the penguins don't know. They might need us at some point. But that's, that's about the only place we're not. So that's a very short summary of who we are. And kind of, we've been around for a long time.
I'm curious to know just a little bit more about the grief recovery method. Like, when somebody comes in and they want to process their grieving through this method, what are some of the first things that they do, or what are the things that you focus on?
Sure. No, it's a great question. So I'll preface it by saying grief drains us of energy and it robs us of choice. And as human beings, no human is immune from grief and loss. it's really a universal experience by any human on the planet. What is often lacking in that are accurate tools that people can use to make choices on how to deal and navigate that loss. The method really starts the conversation there. Like, we teach people some knowledge and information that they didn't have, that we have found almost to be universal across cultures and all around the world. And we give them some helpful information, right? And then we teach them a series of, we call them tools, but they're actions within the method. And we deliver those in one step at a time, because, let's be honest, right? Some of these losses are incredibly heartbreaking, and they are life-changing, and they change our trajectories and can limit our lives. And so we do it in very small steps, and we walk people through these actions of the method that we were never taught, and we help people to do them for the first time for themselves, right? Within this container we call the method. And we help them to deal with one significant loss, have these tools, and then we can help them to use them more in their life if they choose. But regardless, they have the knowledge and the skills after working with one of us or using the handbook to use these tools as much as they want in their life. Because the reality of it is, grief is about an end or a change in a familiar pattern of behavior that results in conflicting feelings, sweet and sour at the same time, right? And so for as long as we're alive, we are all going to deal with ends and changes. And so do you have the right tools to make choices and navigate these losses? And that really is what we teach. And there's a lot more into it, but that's the Reader's Digest overview of the method.
Yeah, that is clear to me, especially since we know in grief, our brains continue to make a new map, and sounds like a very scaffolded, helpful experience for people going through your method. And I'm curious about you, Ed, in your grief experience. What was helpful to you early on? And then what do you maybe wish you had, or what tools do you wish you had then?
So let's take it in reverse order. I wish I'd had these tools of the method way earlier in my life. It would have saved. I mean, it's not that the heartache wouldn't have come, but I would have navigated in a much more healthy way. So I'll do it in reverse order. Going back to how I navigated a lot of losses in my life, and 4 combat tours. So there was plenty of losses that took place in those. Growing up, I lost all of my grandparents, a lot of other things. My parents divorced, which is a grieving event as a first child. I lost pets. We moved a lot. A lot of these big things impacted my life. And for most of my life, I thought I was navigating it fairly well, using things people taught me, like, oh, keep busy, or, have you thought about this, and trying to replace whatever experience I was having with something else. So I was distracted to try and navigate, give it enough time, maybe you'll feel better. Like, these were a lot of the things that I was taught, that we all are taught. And to varying degrees, they got me at least to the next point. I wouldn't say I was thriving through those things, but I sure learned how to survive some of them to varying degrees. The death of my son, Eddie Ryan, was when everything that had ever worked for me stopped working. And no matter how desperately I tried to double down and try harder on all these other things or what people suggested, none of it worked. We know that, and I know, personal experience, grief is cumulative and always negatively cumulative. So over time, and the more losses we have, the more of this emotional energy we're like carrying. And at some point, it's like, tea kettle, you're going to want to explode, or a dam's going to break, or whatever analogy you want to use, right? And we're just overwhelmed. And we just can't deal with one more thing. After Ryan, I did all the stuff, right? Everything everyone always says, all the suggestions. Hey, have you thought about this? I tried it. I had counselors, therapists. They put me on medications for depression and anxiety and all those other things. I felt terrible. But if someone suggested it, I tried it. And the method was the last thing I tried. It was the only thing that truly worked. And it's worked for me for the rest of my life in every loss that I've ever experienced. I've been able to go back and deal with all of those things in healthy ways. And that's so I don't have to experience that. Do I still miss my son? Of course I miss my son. can, you know, working through grief doesn't mean you ever forget the other person. That's impossible. What it does allow me to do is enjoy the sweet memories of that relationship and what it is in my life to this day without it turning sour 5 minutes later. And that's what I want. That's what I want for people, is to be able to remember that cherished person or that cherished relationship or whatever it is that was a source of pain, and enjoy the fond memories and not be crippled and trapped like a little emotional jail cell by the pain surrounding the loss. You'd mentioned hope in one of the questions we had talked about. And I believe that when people are grieving, besides the fact we're devastated and hurting beyond measure, we are looking at a future that is uncertain. There's sadness and fear of that uncertainty that's coming. And what's my life look like without, now that this is no more, or this person is no more? And so we're always seeking, what is that? And I believe that by going through the method and being there and showing up in other people's lives, I'm not just showing, giving them hope. I'm showing them what is possible. And that reinforces that there is a path from a place of just surviving life to one where we thrive in spite of life.
That's so important to know what's possible. And I think that's part of hope. And I'm curious about, what skills do practitioners of the method leverage the most when they're working with people and even in your own grieving process?
One of the things I would answer your question with is, any practitioner of our method has to have used it in their own life. There are a lot of people in this world which will say, oh, you should do this, or you should do that, or you should, you know, and have they actually used the things that they've suggested with you? As a specialist, I will never ask you, if I was working with anyone listening to this or either one of you, I will never ask you to do something I haven't done myself, first and foremost. And then I'm going to not just ask you, I'm going to show you first how to do it and then help you to do it so you're not alone. And I think that's a very significant difference in our specialists compared to some other things that are out there. They have used these for their own lives successfully, right? And now they're leveraging that personal experience and professional training with the method to give you what it is you seek, to help you deal with the unfinished business and emotional pain from a different place, walking with the person versus just telling them where they should go. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is the actual method itself. It has been used, like I said, by millions of people, and it has been refined over 45 years. And so there's a lot of experience, wisdom, knowledge, and experience that get placed within working with one of our specialists. And those specialists also can leverage the collective experience of the Institute when they're working with a client. Like if they come across something, it's like, ooh, I really want to help Erin with this one thing, and she asked me a really great question. Like they don't have to try and guess. They always have us to come back to. And so if you're working with our specialist, you have the entire collective wisdom of the Institute backing that specialist and helping them to help you.
And just to clarify, are your specialists located all over the world as well?
We are. We literally have specialists on 6 continents.
Yeah.
And nice. In most countries.
I wanted to kind of focus in a little bit more on men and grief. And I know I've shared a lot about my personal story with my grief experience after the loss of my child as well. And it's something my partner has not done as much of. And it's led me to be curious a little bit about if there are any themes you might see with men in grief and loss, and what your experience has been with men in grief.
And that's a great question. One of the things that I like about this being created by John Lynn Russell is it was a couple of guys, because there are, and again, this isn't right, wrong, or indifferent. I mean, and I'm not pointing fingers at different belief systems that are around the world. And again, different cultures have varying beliefs. That being said, there is some universal themes around, if you're the male, then there's some gender roles. And part of that is to be the strong one and the supportive one and the protector. Like some of these things are very powerful beliefs that we are raised or socialized to believe. And using my own example, as myself as an example, after Ryan died, I tried to be the strong one for my family because I was raised to believe that. Like that was my job. My job was to be the protector. And of course, when my son died, I also was struggling with the fact I didn't protect him very well. So I'm internalizing all of that. And then I need to be strong for my wife and be strong for my children. But nobody gives you a guidebook that says exactly what that looks like. So I always felt like I was failing miserably and I didn't have the capacity to be there for myself. So how could I be there for them? So again, like some of these things really play out. And I'm not saying that this is gender specific and depending upon how you are socialized in whatever culture or place you're at in the world, sometimes these are incredibly powerful things that are taught. And if that's what we believe, that's what we are going to try and do in those moments. That somehow, if I'm emotionally honest that I'm hurting, my heart is broken, I'm not being strong. If you're a male listening to this, I would challenge you, it takes more strength to be emotionally honest and speak from the heart than it does to try and be dishonest and keep those your true feelings from those you love. I always ask people, do you like getting lied to? And have they ever said, oh yeah, I love it when people lie to me. I've never found this to be true. So when I ask you, how are you doing? And you say, I'm fine, feelings inside not expressed, is how we refer to that acronym. I'm like, are you being honest? Of course not. And here's the thing, just like we're socialized in gender roles, which can play out very strongly sometimes for men, we are also socialized that you tell the truth. So the moment I'm not being honest, I'm in conflict with my own human nature, and it becomes a source of additional pain, in which now I'm going to beat myself up a little bit for this, because now I'm not living in integrity. I'm not authentic, and I'm not authentic and honest with the people I love the most. And what is that duty?
I love that acronym, feelings inside not expressed. I hadn't heard that before. What do you do if you are companioning a griever or you see that someone is hurting, but they don't want to be a burden or they don't want to express themselves to you or you want to support them? What are some things that you would say to someone who's supporting a griever?
So there's a lot of little helpful pieces of advice I would give if you're wanting to support that person. First and foremost, and again, I mentioned this earlier, like a lot of grief is around this unfinished business. I met hopes, dreams, and expectations, the way I wish things had been better, different. We have a lot of these things and we don't feel comfortable enough to share them. So if you're supporting a person who's grieving, first of all, if you show up and you can sit with them, that's huge. How many people of us, I'm sure the two of you could probably rattle off folks that you thought would be there, but couldn't even show up because they were so uncomfortable. But just showing up and sitting with the person when it's incredibly uncomfortable, they're not alone. And a lot of times when we're grieving, we feel very much alone and isolated from the world. Number two, when you do show up, you want to show up, we call it being a heart with ears, right? I want to show up for you to listen. It's listening to what they have to say versus trying to have a conversation. So for me, when I show up and I know someone is hurting, tell me about this person. Tell me about Ryan and listen. What are some of the things you miss about this person? And listen. Again, the rest of society, when there's a grieving event that takes place, a loss, how many of you have heard, well, don't feel bad, LaShawn. They're in a better place. Or, oh, you shouldn't feel bad. At least they're not suffering. Or whatever they want to say, all these intellectual things that even if they're true, don't feel good. But what is the person who has just experienced the loss going through? They're hearing these messages to be quiet, to stop talking. And that's the opposite of what we want. We want to create the space for them to very openly, wherever they want to take it, share. And we want to keep them sharing. Because the more they share, the more that they are getting that stuff out of versus bottling it down. And it's really quick. Like you learn within a few days, you're going to start we call it Academy Award Recovery, where you act like everything is okay. I'm fine. I'm good. Really. When I hear someone say fine, I actually will go up to them and say, are you having feelings inside you're not expressing? What's going on? Just approach the conversation differently. We don't need to give them advice. We don't need to tell them what they should or shouldn't be doing. What we need to do is let them know that they're not alone, that I love you. And tell me more about this person. Tell me more. Like, I want to know more. I want to hear all the things that made this relationship special. And when they share something, at the end of it, don't try to find something meaningful. Just thank them for sharing can I give you a hug?
Yeah. And the way you frame that, it sounds so simple, and it's not, because it is counterintuitive.
It is.
I always talked about this when I worked with students at the university and with language classes, right, at the college level. You focus on reading and writing, but where do you learn the skills of listening? You don't really learn those anywhere else. So I think what you've offered here, Ed, is one example of how to have effective listening skills. And I want to say to our listeners, like, everybody can develop listening skills. And one time I told that to a student and they are like, what? This is something I can develop? I just thought I was a bad listener. So just kind of, I want to reiterate the importance of listening, because I know how effective it's been in my own process as well. And then on that note, I want to also kind of go back into what you're talking about too, is not just from this intellectual space, like you said, it's from the heart. But when I hear that phrase, from the heart, I'm also curious, what does that mean?
Sometimes when people are talking about things, they want to, especially after a loss, like we really want to latch on to all the little details. And when we're sometimes when we are socialized, we'll say, what happens? The story we share is a lot of the details. This happened and this happened, or what, you know, we really latch on to that, because that's how we're taught to communicate, is around the detail piece of it. We don't do as much. I don't believe society does as good a job as we talk about with the listening part, especially on the emotional communication. Well, how does that feel? Again, asking questions that focus on heart-centered, getting to your question, words and language around emotions. I'm working with people, I was telling them there's two types of communication that are going on. There's what our brain likes to communicate at and what our heart is trying to communicate. And they're two separate languages. And the hardest journey, you know, it's like 14 inches from the brain to the heart. And the hardest journey we will ever take is getting out of here and all the details, the intellectual facts of things, and getting to the heart of the matter, which is that I'm heartbroken. I love this about, and using actually feeling words versus the stuff that this stuff wants to talk about. And so even simply asking questions like, besides what were your favorite memories, how do you feel? You know, how did that feel that day when you created that? And even shifting them into their heart a little bit around how they felt. Oh my God, I felt so proud. I felt so joyous. It was one of my favorite memories. Getting into that language versus, well, what happened on that vacation? And then what did you do? And then what did you do? Like, there's a different feel even in that conversation to help them get into their heart.
And I just want to point out, and then I'll pass it over to LaShawn, that when you said help them get into their heart, I had this image of just being embodied, right? Us being in our bodies instead of searching for things outside. And I was in a training, I can't remember the specifics of like the details, but that just our heart sends more information to our brain than our brain sends to the heart. Right. So that's something else too, to consider, even just at the physiological level.
100%. Yeah. You know, we use the analogy of a heart with ears, because there isn't a mouth on that picture. And that's where we want it to be. Let's just be two hearts listening to each other. Or if you're the person supporting the griever, gets into your original question, that's what I want to embody. I just want to have this massive, loving, compassionate heart and two ears to hear what you have to share so I can feel it.
Listening to you talk about being heart-centered and using language that is more focused on feeling and emotion, I could feel like things going deeper. And then when you were talking about the intellectual part where you're looking at details, I could feel that being a little bit more airy, not as deep, and seem to be more surface level. And I love that you also mentioned about listening and talking, telling the story, talking about the person they lost, or even if it's not a person, because it's not always a person when we're dealing with a grief event, a loss of a job, the end of a relationship. And so I think there's a lot to be learned from listening just with people that we have deep connections with, or people that we want to connect with, you know, turning off the head and the mouth and just listening and asking for their story, asking for their experience, and being a companion with them in that retelling. And maybe even, you know, with the compassion, having that same, you know, reaction of excitement or reaction of awe with that person. So you have that communal experience in their retelling. And that also reminds me of our cultures where you gather together and you tell a story. and storytelling and how that brings us together as a community. And I wonder, Ed, do you have any thoughts on a communal level or a community level? Because as a community, as a society, as a nation, we deal with loss in much the same way that we do on an individual level. Distract ourselves, pretend mm-hmm. everything's fine. And, you know, or even like expect other people to be like, oh, you know, it's been a week since you buried so-and-so. It's time to move on, you know, it's kind of, you know, that ridiculous kind of expectation of a griever. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're on the right track there. It's kind of what I've been talking about. Like we need to encourage people to speak from the heart and share their stories around that person. You know, when I first came to the Institute, and I remember having this conversation with John and Russell, I would say anytime there was a significant event going on in the country, the phones would just go crazy, right? And it still happens. And people have this, they feel like, go back, I wasn't around, but I remember when Princess Diana died, but I wasn't with the Institute. I was impacted. I see you two nodding your heads. You remember when she died? We all felt this.
August.
We all felt it, didn't we? As a world. And everyone had, here's the thing, every one of us had a relationship with her. You may never have met her, but you had a relationship. You had hopes, dreams, and expectations around it. And it's the same thing, I'm getting to your question, but like it's the same thing, whether it's in a family dynamic or in a community, we may not know the person. We might know them, of course. They might be a friend or a family member, very close. But even within the greater community, we're all impacted by the events that transpire. Again, this is a human, universal experience. This thing we call connection and love and hope and loss and grief. These are human experiences and we universally share them or we universally impact. And the intellectual side of most of society would say, oh, you shouldn't feel, what do you mean? You didn't even know that person. And it minimizes what they're feeling. The more we encourage people, whether it's through a community opportunity or whether it's through allowing people to express something on social media, like, hey, this happened and I feel, we just need to acknowledge that those people are expressing it. The more we share, you know, like there's so many different rituals around, say, death. And I agree with you. We grieve for everything, right? Everything. Any change in a familiar pattern of behavior is a grieving event. So we help people with all of those things, loss of trust, loss of faith, the whole nine yards. But everybody's impacted. We need to give people, and like going back to the rituals in communities where people show up to memorials that didn't even know. We want to give people the opportunity, they just showed up to share a story or say something. Now, hopefully they do it in a loving way, you know, and it's not reinforcing, oh, we shouldn't feel bad because or something else like that. That's not helpful. But the bottom line is we need to give people the space because if they're showing up or they feel like they have something to say, they're hurting too. And we know that, and we teach this a lot, that every relationship is individual. The three of us on this call, and if there's 100 people listening right now, right? All of you have an individual unique relationship with any aspect of our society or any person in our society. I'm not going to pick a topic, but just pick a person that's famous. At least they're in the news. I don't care. You all have a relationship with that person. You all have an individual unique relationship, set of beliefs around them. And if something happens, you ought to be able to express your individual unique impact around that relationship. And the rest of us should try and hold space to honor your individual unique relationship without judgment, without criticism, without trying to fix it. Grievers already feel like they're broken because like, why can't I get through this? Why am I not strong enough? Aaron, back to our earlier conversation, why am I not strong enough to deal with this? We feel broken. And I want everyone to hear that when you're grieving, you're not broken. You don't need to be fixed. You need to be heard. You need to have your feelings and your experience heard by someone else in a way that they just hear you and they love you and they thank you for sharing and they acknowledge that's where you're at.
And that really goes back to something LaShawn and I have talked about throughout in being curious and instead of approaching people from a place of non-judgment and even just having that framework in our minds, whether it's with our friends who are grieving or not grieving, our community members, coming from a place of curiosity, I think can always be a nice little switch to move from judgment. Again, a very different approach. Judgment's more thinking. Mm-hmm. Curiosity is going to take more energy sometimes, right? Even though it seems like less. So I also want to acknowledge that too. And for those who are supporting grievers and holding space, that there is an energy piece there as well for the people who are holding that space. So making sure they also have the outlets and support that they need as well. So I guess that leads me to, I think my last question for our interview on this topic is, you know, how do you best support your people on your team who are supporting grievers directly?
So one of the things that we have this shared language, which is nice around all the specialists, because we've all been through this method. And I will quite often, like, they'll call because they're working with somebody and it's a particularly, you know, their heart aches, obviously, for this client. They want to give them the best experience and the best help possible. And sometimes I have to lovingly remind one of the specialists, I'm like, I can't help but notice, like, you're also grieving the impact of this because we're humans. If you don't feel things, you're probably not in the business of helping other people want to feel better. And you were impacted. So I, you know, sometimes we lovingly have to remind each other that, you know, we have to take care of us as well. And it's okay if you're impacted as well. It speaks to what's right about you. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this, right? And anyone who's there trying to support other people who are hurting, it speaks to what's right about you and what and your heart is in the right place. And you need to keep care of your heart too. So maybe you do go find a third party who can listen to you, who can be your heart with ears, can be the place you express what you're feeling without judgment and criticism. I also lovingly remind a lot of the specialists that call me or a gap calls with, you got to do your own work too. That's part of taking care of you. You know, LaShawn, I saw you just have a drink. I'm not calling, this is, for those of you that can't see a video, it's just an audio. LaShawn had this drink of water, which we definitely always want to hydrate. But it reminds me, like, you can't, LaShawn, you couldn't give from an empty cup. You can't even take care of yourself if that hydro flask was empty. So we have to do the things we need to do for us so I can better be there for the people that I care about. I can better be that example to my children or the people around me. You know, we don't do that, we're never going to be able to help the other people that we want to. And if you're out there and you're wanting to help the people in your life who are having a hard time, right? We've also got to take care of us first. And it's not selfish. It means that I want to be there. So what do I need to do so I can?
Wonderful. Very wise words. And since we are getting very close to that time, at the end of our episodes, we do a coaching nugget of wisdom. So what are you thinking, Aaron? Should we share our coaching nuggets of wisdom and then have Ed close us out? Or what are you thinking?
Yes, that sounds great. So LaShawn and I will share, and then Ed, you'll have a moment to share one last nugget of wisdom that you want to share with our audience. So I'll pass it back to LaShawn. I'll let you go first.
So many things came up in this really beautiful conversation. I'm taking away the acronym FINE, which is such an important acronym to hold in my mind when someone I know is having a hard time. And I ask them how they're doing and they say fine, then I have that acronym where I can gently ask, you know, do you have feelings inside you're not expressing? And I love the, thank you for telling me, and then leaving it at that. I love that too. So my coaching nugget of wisdom is, it's an invitation to our listeners. Where can you find space in your life right now, especially where in the holiday season, lots of get-togethers, parties, things happening where you're going to be in a group. Where can you open your ears and be that heart with ears?
I like that, LaShawn. And when you said heart, it's really where my mind was going just throughout this whole conversation. The imagery of a heart just expanding is kind of what I was seeing throughout our interview and conversation with Ed today. And so I think when I'll just share personally, get to that place of being more heart-centered, I'm less anxious, I'm more open. And that's what I encourage our listeners to try on as well, really opening one's heart space. And I think while that might help others, it will also help yourself too. Ed, what would you like to share?
First of all, I want to thank you all for having me here. I want to thank all of you that are listening for this opportunity to have a conversation on a really important topic. There's so many other things I would share and Always be a resource for anyone out there who wants someone to talk to or ask questions, including the two of you. But the holidays are here. And I would be remiss if I didn't, give a piece of a suggestion. The holidays are hard. And one of the reasons that they are so difficult is because we are reminded that there are people, pets, and relationships that are not present. And maybe they're not present because of we just can't physically be together and we miss them, to perhaps the relationship is estranged, to perhaps the relationship has ended due to death, divorce, or any other reason. There's an empty seat at the table, folks. And I talk to people all the time, from the perspective of being a bereaved parent. And I love my family. And I had my family here for Thanksgiving. But only one person in my family privately asked about the empty seat at the table. If we're missing somebody in the holidays, folks, and we all know people, and bottom line is, that's all of us too. You're looking for that conversation starter. Ask about the empty seat. Ask about the person who's not there. Offer to share a story. Be the one that goes first. Hey, I wish Grandma was here. My favorite story of her during the holidays was, and like you were mentioning, Sean, start a conversation. Who else wants to share their favorite story? Who else wants? I mean, again, folks, we all know the elephant in the room during the holidays, and that's quite often the source of the pain. So you be the emotional leader in that situation that is the heart-centered person wanting to love the other people and wanting to be there and support and care for their hearts during a hard time, which is the holidays. So be the emotional leader. Go first. Talk about the empty seat at the table. And then invite others to do the same in a way that they are simply heard. Thank them for sharing. And give them a hug and tell them what you love them. And make these people who are not physically with us, but they are there, a part of the celebration. Include them.
Well, thank you. Again, for our listeners, we just had an amazing conversation today with Ed Owens, the Vice President of the Grief Recovery Institute. And Ed, can you please tell our audience how they can find you?
Sure. So the easiest way to find me is go to griefrecoverymethodoneword.com. And you can find me on the About Us page. There's a phone number at the bottom. My email, if you want to reach out to me, is simply edowens@griefrecoverymethod.com. So I'm a pretty easy person to get a hold of. My phone number is on there. The website has a lot of resources, folks. We have 7 free ebooks you can download if you're looking for some resources. We have literally hundreds and hundreds of blogs. We have a YouTube channel. We have all types of resources that are out there. So you can please access that. Email me. And if you do, you want to jump on a call, I also do that as well.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Maychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.